Now he shakes hands with Mrs. Robert Kennedy and with young Joseph. Senator Edward Kennedy passing him by. The other children now going past the president and past the hearse toward the five limousines in which they will ride. Saddened but numbed, I would say, at this point. Sergeant Shriver, the ambassador to Paris, reaching now to shake hands with Mr. Johnson. President standing back, away, not wishing to intrude, obviously, and yet wanting to be here to honor this family, which has become so much a part of the tradition of American life. Now, Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy, and beside her, her son, John Jr., and behind her, Carolyn, walking with other members of the family. Mrs. John F. Kennedy's head covered by a black lace mantilla, a simple black dress, looking very thin, very wan today. Passing the president. And everybody watching them. And everybody wondering what Mrs. John F. Kennedy has been thinking these many days, and how much help she has been able to be to Mrs. Robert F. Kennedy. Most of the crowd now, the crowd who waited to see this last touching moment here at Union Station as the coffin was placed inside the black hearse, most of them moving away to the buses and to other limousines. The family now getting into the five limousines that will follow this hearse as it makes its way south of here, past the new Senate office building where Senator Kennedy's office was located, and then along Constitution Avenue, past the Justice Department, past the ellipse to the south of the White House, and then past Lincoln Memorial and Resurrection City and across Memorial Bridge, where its silent passage will be somewhat unlike the passage of President John F. Kennedy in his final trip across that bridge, so well remembered by clip-clop of the horse's hooves as the caisson moved slowly across Memorial Bridge. Dark here now, and one wonders how quickly the motorcade will move. Because this has been a long and trying day for all of these people, a long and trying week for the family and friends of Robert Francis Kennedy. And still they linger a few moments around the car, some of them trying to decide which cars they should ride in. And now one large group moving back to take its place in another car other than the one they had obviously been assigned to first. These last minute changes in plan, which mark so many ceremonial affairs. One last minute change was the route that is to be followed, if indeed we are to believe what we were first told by people who were making preparations. This procession was to have gone at one point past the White House on Pennsylvania Avenue, a White House in which Robert Kennedy was no stranger, having been there so many times when his brother was president, been there as a member of the cabinet, been there as President Kennedy's most trusted advisor, a White House in which he himself hoped to live beginning next January. But then I suppose as a matter of some change in plan, some afterthought, it was decided not to do that, to go instead past the south side of the White House and walk away on the south side of the ellipse, that elliptical-shaped park which lies to the south and which visitors to the White House are so familiar with, across which they can see the Washington Monument gleaming in the light at night as it's gleaming now. Now the hearse has pulled away, pulling out of this vast concourse of Union Station. Secret Service men running to get to the car to which they're assigned. The president's car has left, and the cars of the families are now starting to move. And once again, Union Station has welcomed home one of the nation's leading citizens. A sight that will become even more infrequent over the years, we suspect, in this age of jet travel. But a trip which today certainly proved its worth in giving those along the way, those many thousands along the way, their final opportunity to pay their respects to Senator Kennedy. Outside now to the vast plaza that lies in front, where the three huge flagpoles are, of course, carrying or have been carrying their flags all day at half staff. We are not too sure now that it's dark whether those flags have been lowered. And where, since 2 o'clock this afternoon, Eastern Time, people have been sitting on the grassy spots around this lovely area of Washington that surrounds the Capitol, waiting for Senator Robert Kennedy's final passage. A crowd, as we said earlier, largely of Negroes, for this is indeed an area of Washington that for many years has been populated largely by Negroes, although now it is an area which is being redeveloped and which is becoming one of the more popular places for the young people who work in the Senate office building, in the House office building, in the Capitol, and their families. Certainly one of the loveliest areas of Washington, as anyone who's come through Union Station, who's stepped outside and looked over at the dome of the Capitol, will know. Now the last car has left our sight. And the ceremonies here at Union Station are concluded. A very moving sight, George, to watch the brave faces of the Kennedys. A very, very moving sight. Now back to George Herman.
Thank you very much, Steve Rowan. Now as the cortege, the procession, moves out with the confusion which, of course, always attends the organizing of any motorcade, moves out from Union Station the very few blocks towards the new Senate office building. The funeral procession now has left the area of the Union Terminal where the entire procession got off the train that brought it from New York and started the movement through the wet streets of Washington. It goes first to the new Senate office building. This is where Senator Kennedy, the man, the politician, the candidate, organized himself. This is where he worked. This is where the aides, whom correspondent Steve Rowan referred to, those persons getting off the train with, in Steve Rowan's words, their faces telling a story of tiredness. This is where those aides rallied around Senator Kennedy and helped to organize his campaign, his drive toward the presidency, when he finally decided to make that move. This is the area in which Senator Kennedy was if not perhaps a king, although some said that, this is where he was an ace among politicians, where he performed at his most brilliant. And I wonder if my colleague here in the studio, CBS News correspondent Martin Agronsky, has some observations on Kennedy the man, Kennedy the family man, Kennedy the politician.
Kennedy the man was different from the other Kennedys, different from his brother Jack, the late president, different from the only survivor now of the four Kennedy brothers, Edward Kennedy, the senator from Massachusetts. He was an activist to the fingertips, a man of enormous vigor, a man who could bear a grudge and could love with great depth and intensity, a man who could hate it, as his father once said, Joseph Kennedy, with intensity, a man who lived life to the full and was fully involved and fully committed. Kennedy the politician was an extraordinarily skillful politician. He was a man who organized for his brother John Fitzgerald all of the delegate votes that brought the nomination and eventually the presidency to John Fitzgerald Kennedy. His operation as the campaign manager of the late president was really a marvel of energy, of initiative, of perception, and of great professional political skill. Kennedy as a senator, again, was an activist, deeply involved in the legislative operation of the Senate. I suppose in a way outside the establishment, but could not be ignored by the establishment. A man who stood forth always and spoke his mind. And a man driven, too, one feels when one looks back on his career in the Senate. Driven always, I think, by a feeling of, it seems to absorb all of the Kennedys, of the destiny of this strange, glittering family that's seen so much of the power and the glory and has tasted so deeply now of tragedy and of heartbreak and tears. It's difficult when one looks at the life of Robert Kennedy not to compare his life, the lives of this family, almost to characters from the Greek tragedies of Sophocles, who wrote of those so prosperous and well endowed. They invited the jealousy of the gods who destroyed them.
And now the motorcade pauses briefly in the area of the new Senate office building. Crowds sitting on the walls, on the marble parapets of that great edifice, the new Senate office building, the butt of so many jokes, but quite a comfortable place for the senators and those who worked in its marble walls and air-conditioned rooms. It passes in the shadow, if you'd like to call it that, certainly under what would be the shadow in daylight of the Capitol of the United States, now a brilliantly lighted dome shining forth as the sort of central beacon always of the city of Washington, as Federal City, which seems to revolve around the Capitol dome, although the Kennedys have always felt that the real center of power was in Washington, still the center of all eyes, it was in the White House, still the center of all eyes in Washington is always the beautiful Capitol Dome, looming now against the sky as the cortege goes past. The cortege moves between lines not only of mourners, of admirers, but also through an extraordinary security guard. A security guard made up of not only the police, but the D.C. National Guard, the Park Police of Washington, the Federal Bureau of Investigation has sent men, the Central Intelligence Agency has men in the crowd, the State Department Security Force is out, all the security agencies of the Treasury Department, which has many security agencies in its body, Naval Intelligence personnel are part of the security forces, and even the Defense Intelligence Agency. Patrick Murphy, who's the director of public safety for the city of Washington, said that he believed that if all went well, he'd have some 900 metropolitan policemen and some 800 National Guardsmen lining the procession's route, a route which is expected to take on the order of 30 minutes, lining the route from Union Station all the way to the cemetery. The guardsmen to be stationed some three paces away from the curb facing the procession. the policemen behind the military lines, mostly facing the crowds on the sidewalk. In addition, although, as far as I've been able to find out, no trouble is yet expected, no trouble is in any way in sight, but just as a precaution, should there have been a sudden swing in mood, some 1,000 other guardsmen are on duty at the D.C. Armory. Now, as the procession moves along, we understand that some of the advance buses have carried some of the people from Union Station out to Arlington Cemetery. Let's get a report there from CBS News correspondent Bruce Morton.
George, the buses and some private cars now have been arriving here for some time, looking down the winding roadway that leads from the Kennedy gravesite to the gates of Arlington Cemetery, to the road and to Memorial Bridge. You can see a stream of moving lights. The first buses seem to carry mostly reporters. The press area here has been filling up steadily, and now one can see the walking streams of mourners, those who came on the train from New York, who were then invited to the service here, moving on foot after they've left the buses and cars down the last path towards the Kennedy gravesite. Silhouetted in the imperfect television lights here as black moving shapes against the rows of white gravestones which reflect that light. Also, about 50 members of the Harvard University band who have been waiting here most of the afternoon have moved into position just on the south side of the Kennedy gravesite. And all around the gravesite there are wreaths of flowers. The family had said earlier they didn't want the traditional kind of banked floral arrangement, and so it's been done differently. There are just two or three wreaths banked by the side of the grave. Most of them have been placed on this rising slope south of President Kennedy's grave, covering just yards of grass. There must be 100, 200 wreaths spread out, and highlighted now by the lights here. George?
Thank you, Bruce. The cortege now making the swing down the broad highway of Constitution Avenue, moving past one of the most beautiful fountains in Washington, then along past the Federal Trade Commission, and about to pass the Archives, that building in which the great documents of the United States, our Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and also, ironically, all the documents pertaining to the assassination of John F. Kennedy and all the objects, the bullets, the clothing involved in that also rest. It should now be coming pretty closely into view of CBS reporter Mariah McLaughlin, who's stationed at the Justice Department. Mariah?
Yes, we can just begin to see the lights in the distance, and the crowd, which had grown restive from a long, hot day, has grown very quiet. It is just about at the corner, just about to come in front of the Justice Department. We had heard a report, and as you say, it's at this time, arrangements are very difficult to make, that the procession would not stop in front of the Justice Department for Attorney General Ramsey Clark because of the lateness of the hour, but that may change. It's passing. The crowd is extremely quiet. There's hardly a sound. The only noise really that you can hear is children who have grown restive after this long wait. Now there's a smattering of applause, very tiny applause, and people running from one block to the next block to get another look. The hearse is stopped right now in front of the main door of the Justice Department. Just a moment, still waiting there. When Robert Kennedy first became Attorney General, he sort of shocked everyone with this sort of casual air, followed by his big dog Brumus up and down the halls of this Justice Department. Now the hearse is moving on, and moving on at a fairly rapid pace. You can see Senator Ted Kennedy seated in the front seat, very visible with flashing lights that are set up around this area. Now the other cars following along and moving quite rapidly. All the traffic on this street was closed off about an hour ago. The only thing that has gone by is those press buses and the buses with the other guests going up to the cemetery. George, you were speaking of the security. Early in the afternoon along this street, the Secret Service came along and opened every manhole, opened every mailbox, went into the base of every lamp. There is extreme security along the street, men in plain clothes who say that they are with the military. The procession is halted now, I think, slowly. The hearse is just passing in front of the new Smithsonian building, headed down towards the Washington Monument, which is just gleaming in the dark sky. There are no stars out. There's a full moon, and the Washington Monument is lit and beautiful. The cars are now doubling up and not in a single file and moving quite rapidly. The people here, except for that just a little tiny smattering of applause, were stoic. They had no reaction. There was no screaming or tears, some of the things that we heard on at different stations coming down when the body was brought down on the train. Some women are carrying flowers, and I spoke to a couple of them earlier, and they said they weren't going to make any attempt to throw the flowers, that they were just carrying them as a symbol. Doubled up, still going past the Justice Department.
Do I gather, Mariah, that they did not slow down or stop as they passed the Justice Department?
The hearse slowed down, and I would say for not more than 15 seconds, very brief, and then moved off quite rapidly. Attorney General Ramsey Clark may have joined by just getting in another car, but there was no small, even tiny ceremony as they had originally anticipated. There should be no reason for this because no other stop was planned, but the traffic has jammed up just a little bit along the road here, and it is not moving quite as rapidly as it did when it first went by.
Mariah, I'd like to interrupt here for a news report which we've gotten from several sources. Richard Cardinal Cushing, the Archbishop of Boston, who has been ailing in recent years, he's quite an elderly gentleman, 72 years old, is reported to have become ill while he was aboard the Kennedy funeral train. And two doctors were summoned to the Union Station to meet him on arrival, but he insisted on walking off the train unassisted without anybody helping him. Nevertheless, an Army official says he is ill, but we don't know exactly how ill. An administrator at Providence Hospital here in Washington reports to CBS News that she understands Cardinal Cushing is returning immediately to Boston. Now, immediately sounds like an absolute word, but when you come to a man who is as tough and as strong a fibered man as Cardinal Cushing, it's going to be hard to see how quick immediately is, because he is scheduled to participate in the ceremony at the gravesite, and unless the Cardinal is seriously ill, unless he is incapacitated, one would venture to expect that nothing would keep him from the last farewell to the members of this family, to another of the members of this family, with whom he has been so extremely closely associated over the years. The report, once again, that Richard Cardinal Cushing, the Archbishop of Boston, was taken ill on the train. Nevertheless, he walked off unassisted. He seems to be that strong, and an Army official says he is ill, but we don't know just how ill. That's where the matter stands on the matter of Cardinal Cushing at the moment, and we'll report to you further if we get anything additional on the story of Cardinal Cushing. Mariah, has the cavalcade, has the motorcade, has the cortege now left your area entirely?
It has almost moved out of sight, and the people waited until the very last car had gone by. Now the crowd is breaking up, and you can tell how quiet it was before because of all the noise. The military trucks with military police that had been parked off the street are leaving now, and the procession is almost disappearing down Constitution Avenue. One of the reasons it's so difficult to see it is because Constitution Avenue is such a lovely street, tree-lined, and it's very difficult to see down the street and just see how far they have advanced. In the small ceremony that they had today in the center court of the Justice Department, aside from Attorney General Ramsey Clark, they had Archibald Cox, who is a professor now at Harvard and was a former Solicitor General. And he gave a very moving speech about Bobby Kennedy. And at the end, he said, the only thing I can say is there is an aching emptiness because our leader is gone. Other speakers referred to Robert Kennedy as the most outstanding and dynamic Attorney General the United States had ever had. When Ramsey Clark concluded his program, he was very emotional. He said, "There are sad hours. These are sad hours and sad days, but Bob Kennedy stood for life, and that is how we should remember him." And when he opened the ceremony, he said, "We are gathered this afternoon to remember Bob Kennedy on the day he will go past this place he loved and served so well for the last time." I think, George, that the mood here was not one of an outpouring, as I said before, of emotion and grief, but very quiet, stoic sorrow. And now I can see, I would say that the cortege should be passing the Washington Monument about now.
Thank you, Mariah. At that point, I think we can pick it up here, and we'll be ready shortly to send it to Hal Walker at the Lincoln Memorial. The cortege passes between, of course, the Lincoln, Washington Monument and the White House, the ellipse behind or south of the White House, on past the Pan American Union, one of the most beautiful buildings in Washington, and across the street from the Pan American Union on the other side, the old Navy and Munitions Building, a temporary building, or TEMPO as they're called here, which certainly does not rate as one of the most beautiful buildings in Washington. On past the National Science Foundation, the Federal Reserve Building, and then just about opposite the National Academy of Sciences, that's just about south of the new State Department building, the cortege will turn left on Henry Bacon Drive. Henry Bacon, the drive is named after him. Henry Bacon is the man who was the architect of the Lincoln Memorial, the man who built that beautiful classic-style columned monument to Abraham Lincoln to house the beautiful 19-foot-tall statue by Daniel Chester French, one of the most moving sights in all Washington. Now, of course, Lincoln looks out not only over the reflecting pool, the Washington Monument, and the Capitol behind it. He looks out also with that look of kindly tolerance on the poor people's city, Resurrection City. And in that area now we have CBS newsman Hal Walker. Hal, is there anything in sight yet from your position?
George, right in the middle of Henry Bacon Drive, we can see two cars abreast, very slowly moving this way, and about the middle of the drive. They have red flashing lights on the front and are moving ever so slowly toward the end of the drive. The people here have hushed completely. They've not been very noisy all during their long wait through the afternoon and into the evening, but now they are coming to a complete silence as these first two cars come by. It's impossible to tell. The hearse is not yet in sight. These two advance cars are obviously setting the tone for what is going to be a very solemn and very quiet observance of the passage of the procession. A few moments ago, the choir here, the combined choir of the Washington, D.C. Choral Arts Society and a Montgomery County group from nearby Maryland sang "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." A number of the people lining the route joined in and sang with them. All of the people waiting are across the roadway from the Lincoln Memorial. They're on the Washington Monument side, on the Resurrection City side. There's one section that's been set aside for residents of Resurrection City. There are, 300 to 400 crowded into that small roped-off area, but I see several others whom I've seen inside the city during the days that I've been down here covering the activities of the Poor People's Campaign. We talked earlier, I heard talk earlier about the security, and it is very much in evidence. There are military personnel stationed every few feet, and interspersed with them are members of the Park Police, the Metropolitan Police of Washington, and many, many plainclothes Secret Service men. Now we can see the procession moving into Henry Bacon Drive. There's the limousine in front, and now we can see the hearse bearing...